Welcome to Unsquish the Fish, the podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up, Fins up, Fins up.
Landry. What's up, Dolphins fans? It's Ron, still your host, still here, Unsquish the Fish. Today I'm talking with Lewis Sung again from FinManiacs.com. How you doing, Lewis?
I'm doing good, Ron. It's good to be here.
Hey, man. How you feeling about Landry?
How else should I feel? I should feel awesome because Jarvis Landry is still doing what he does. I still love the fire. He's still burning strong, and I'm glad to have him on the football team.
I'm getting excited about him, man. I'm starting to get real excited about Landry, just personally. That's me. But all right, man. Well, we're just going to jump right into this thing because we know we got plenty to talk about. We just had ourselves a game last night, and obviously I know you weren't at the game, but you were at the practices leading up to the game. So why don't you maybe we talk a little bit about what you saw in the practices and how that kind of maybe translated to the field and all that fun stuff.
Well, when I saw the practices in Carolina, the trip was it was a great experience. I met a lot of people on Twitter that I hadn't before. Rob Prophet, Chris Early, otherwise known as Duke. I met a lot of these guys. They're awesome people. And Jeff from Fins Focus, awesome guys. And from what I could tell from the practices, it seemed like the Dolphins were able to pretty much do whatever it was they wanted to do. I saw them on offense. They were pretty much marching the ball down the field. The defense was making plays left and right, and it translated to the game. As you saw, the starting offense for Carolina could not get past our defense. It was just nothing doing. Cam Newton almost managed to get in there by himself, but he just couldn't get far enough in there.
Thank you, Akins and Thomas.
Yeah. They did a good job. And honestly, the offensive line was another shocker. And really, I had been seeing it for some time, but I didn't expect it to work the way that it did. I've been recently going on a pretty much of a tweeting spree about how much better Dallas Thomas has looked. And needless to say, I'm getting a lot of negative feedback from my comments, because how dare I assume that Dallas Thomas is anything other than his usual below mediocre self. Like, that would imply that suddenly Dallas Thomas is not worthy of being the team's whipping boy anymore. Who are we supposed to hate on if we can't hate on Dallas Thomas? So,
yeah, I got you. But he is playing better. I mean, I don't want to jump to conclusions that that's going to translate into week one, but right now, even in preseason, he is not getting destroyed and owned, and we've seen him get destroyed and owned in preseason. I mean, owned in some preseason games.
Well, I'm gonna have to say this is that he hasn't met anybody on the level of Gerald McCoy yet. So,
and you remember, I've seen the GIF like 100 times against Dallas, and I don't even know if it was preseason or a regular game. I think it was preseason where he just got pushed back. When he was playing, I think he was at the left tackle spot. I don't know if you've ever seen that GIF before, but it's pretty hilarious. I'll have to find it again and retweet it.
Well, he doesn't belong at left tackle anyway. He belongs at the guard position, and now that they finally decided to stick him there and leave him there, he's finally been able to develop. It's actually funny because the coaching staff has recently come out and admitted that they've basically stunted Thomas's growth by trying to turn him into this Nate Garner 2.0, trying to make him a utility lineman. What they should have been doing all along, and maybe he wouldn't have been such an issue if they had just done this to begin with, is they finally just picked a spot for Thomas to play in, and now he's actually able to do what it is that he's showing now. He's actually playing much better. He's been locked down at left guard. He's been able to get the techniques down. The only thing that he hasn't been able to do just yet is that he hasn't been able to push with power. That's his apparent problem, because in the red zone you kind of have to push with power in order to get the running back into the end zone. Mm-hmm. And that's his issue, but his technique and his footwork and his hands, they seem to be doing much better, and it's translating into the field, because anything outside of the red zone and Dallas Thomas is actually looking like one of the best offensive linemen out there, him and Mike Pouncey and Juwan James.
Yeah, I mean, you can't deny it right now, honestly.
You can't deny it.
Who do we have left to play? We play the Bucks, I assume, in Atlanta? Atlanta in Tampa?
Atlanta's next.
I'm trying to think. Well, they have... His name just slipped from my brain.
Is it Paul Soliai?
Yeah, Soliai. They have Soliai, so that could be kind of a matchup. See, maybe a little bit of a test for him, since we're saying he really hasn't had that big test yet.
Soliai is good, but he's nowhere near the level of Gerald McCoy.
Well, so. Gerald McCoy is like 85-90% of a Sioux. You know what I mean? There's not those guys. You're not going to face those guys much. You know what I mean? So I mean, even if you could find somebody that's just good, like, you know, at the good level, not necessarily the great level, it would still be a test for Thomas.
Well, we'll have to see what it happens, because Thomas has not had to face anybody tougher than Earl Mitchell so far. And with all due respect to Mitchell, he's nowhere near the level of Gerald McCoy either, and certainly not at the level of Ndamukong Suh, although I'm sure his play is going to improve playing next to Suh, but that doesn't mean his actual skill level is that of Suh.
So he's going to have a lot to deal with,
and I'm starting to buy into the hype a little bit, though, because it's not like it was just a one-time deal. It was a fluke, and he had one really good day, and then he went back to being who we all know him as. He's been pretty consistent with this newly elevated level of play, and I'm starting to believe that maybe I made this comparison before, and I also got a lot of crap for it, because again, I'm talking about Dallas Thomas here. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it took Evan Mathis at one point was not considered good enough to make the Miami Dolphins football team. Now, whether you want to call that an issue with talent evaluation, that's fair. I understand it. But nevertheless, at the time, Mathis was not considered good enough to win the starting job, which means that they thought that other people were playing better. So I would imagine that Mathis was not doing as well as the other people in camp, and that's why he didn't make the team. It's not just because it was bad talent evaluation. It was because these other people are doing better than you, and we're going to move them out. I wasn't around for the other stuff, so I don't know that for a fact. Maybe Mathis was doing good at that point. It was a long time ago. But the simple fact of the matter is, maybe what we're seeing here is that now that Thomas has found a place to play and he's being nailed down at that spot, maybe he's finally getting to figure out what it is that is exactly he's supposed to be doing. Maybe what we're dealing with here, and this is going to sound blasphemous because how dare I say something like this, but maybe it's possible that Dallas Thomas could eventually become Evan Mathis 2.0, in the sense that once you find your spot, because Evan Mathis hasn't played right guard since 2008. So for the past 7 years, he's been exclusive at left guard. He has not been moved. He has not been shoved. He's been glued to his spot, and that is where he's become the Pro Bowl player that everybody is begging for. So maybe Dallas Thomas, if you nail him down, stop trying to move him around and experiment with him, give him time to develop at one position, maybe he'll be good enough to be considered a starter in the league. I don't see why it's so impossible to believe simply because it's Dallas Thomas. There's been no bigger critic of Dallas Thomas than I have. And we did the show before, Ron. Mm-hmm. When I came onto your show the first time, I basically said flat out, Dallas Thomas will not be the starter heading into week one. In fact, I fully expected him to lose the job like right away. And I expected Jamil Douglas to firmly prove that he was more worthy of the job than Dallas Thomas, and boy, did that prediction turn out to be wrong. And I don't have a problem with admitting it either. I'm glad that it's working out, and that's what other Dolphins fans should be as well. The fact that there are actually some people hoping that Thomas and Douglas fail just so we have an excuse to sign Mathis is ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, let's face it, there's people out there, and I can think of one person on Twitter in particular, and if you listen to my show, you know who you are, that if the Dolphins went 16-0, they would still say that Philbin was the worst coach in the history of the NFL. So, yes, so there are also people that no matter what Thomas does, no matter how good he does, they want him to fail because they think he stinks, they think he doesn't belong. But I will say that point where you said that Dallas Thomas could be Evan Mathis 2.0, I think a few people might have crashed into the side of the road when they heard that.
Well, that I know it sounds crazy, but – And I'm not saying he'll be as good as Mathis. I'm just saying that it's the mentality.
No, I understand totally what you're saying, and you make some great points about it. I just know that just that statement on
just
his face.
Just that statement, yeah, taking it out of context, and then it's like, what?
I'm going to quote in the next article. I'm quoting, he says he's 2.0, Evan Mathis 2.0. No. hey, I'm just happy because we were so nervous about the guard position, and I mean, there's still questions, obviously. There's Billy Turner and Douglas, and they still seem to be kind of playing around in there a little bit at right guard. But it seems like Dallas Thomas is playing well, so let's just keep rolling with it till something changes.
And one more point that needs to be made here is that all this improvement is being made without Brandon Albert at left tackle. Right now he's dealing with Jason Fox, who is doing not good enough for me. But so what's going to happen when Albert shows up again?
Yeah, I mean, it makes the line even better.
And Thomas,
you're right. I mean, it can't be denied. So I mean, there's actually some excitement to look at in our offensive line and not just fear like there was going into camp for sure.
Well, for some reason, the game after the Panthers game was over with, people were not happy. And I can understand why. There was some protection problems, but none of those protection problems came from, as far as I know, it didn't come from the interior of the line. If it did, it came from Billy Turner's side, and the left side came from Jason Fox, not Dallas Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to be worried about it because of depth, I would say that keep in mind that Albert's not back yet, and everything's going to – if he comes back healthy quick enough, and I expect him to be back by at least week 3.
Yeah.
Because if he's not back by week 1, I'm not going to sweat it. Washington doesn't scare me that much, and – especially with their quarterback currently made of glass and Sue ready to eat him the first chance he gets.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jacksonville is Jacksonville, so what do you want from that? So unless the Dolphins completely wet the bed on that, it should be 2-0 right there. And then when Buffalo comes around, I expect Albert to be back by then. And then we should have a good enough line to handle it, assuming Dallas Thomas's improvement is not a fluke. Because he'll be dealing with a lot with Marcell Dareus and Kyle Williams and those guys.
Yeah, for sure, because even with a good offensive line, that Buffalo D-line can be tough to deal with, no doubt about that. But that one, and I know you talked a little bit about the protection, that one really, that just blown block pretty much, wasn't even a lineman. It ended up being Deion Sims who blew that blocking assignment. So,
well, Billy Turner did blow one. It looked like he had just completely missed his guy, so...
I mean, but it's going to happen. I mean, there's no such thing as playing perfect. That's what I don't understand, that you know, fans are looking for, you know, perfection. I mean, you're striving for perfection, but you shouldn't necessarily be expecting perfection. There's a difference.
When you're a Dolphins fan and you've been in the level of mediocre for as long as we have, especially when a lot of the fans are older fans who are used to the greatness of the 16-0 and the Dan Marino years, you kind of get to the point where you're just so impatient that you're looking for every possible way to make sure that your team wins. And if your team does not win, then somebody's head needs to roll. They don't care who, but somebody's head needs to roll. That's why it's so easy to pick on Dallas Thomas, because it seemed like he was getting chance after chance, even though he didn't apparently deserve it. Now that he finally is deserving it, I think what's happening is that they're kind of going through a bit of a withdrawal. It's like suddenly there's no one to pick on. So, oh, wait, let's go pick on Billy Turner. He's struggling. Oh, Turner sucks. He's never going to do it. He's not going to – give him time. Give him time.
Yeah, he's only had nope. He only has a couple real game experience as far as regular season games.
There's no patience. It's funny to me. Everybody who talks about Ryan Tannehill, at least the smart ones anyway, have preached patience. Wait for it. Quarterback needs time to develop. It's okay. He'll get better. And finally, in year 4, it appears that patience is paying off. But for every other position on the team, there is no patience. Be good now or get out.
That's a good point. You're right about that. You're right. Are you speaking about the patience brigade?
Yes. The patience brigade got what they wanted. Omar finally had to admit that. Guess what? I'm not going to repeat what he tweeted because that's not my style. But essentially, he said, "Congratulations, patience brigade. Your quarterback has finally come to life." So okay, there you go. Finally, you admitted that we were right. You can't stick your quarterback in a microwave and hope it pans out. That's what happened to RG3. He was good for 1 year, and then he got hurt, and that was the end of RG3. And people are still hoping and praying that RG3 comes back and becomes that guy again. He's not going to come become that guy again. He is gun shy. He's not. He's punch drunk. He doesn't want any part of it, and he keeps getting beat on over and over and over again. So not only is he messing his own career up, he's the Redskins are also messing him up because they're not giving him good enough protection.
Well, I've said this before. I'll continue to say it. I think Jay Gruden doesn't like him, and it's just setting him up to fail. And
I
believe I said that on an episode before, so I'll continue to say it. He doesn't like him.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. I'm sure Jay Gruden has issues with him. I'm sure Jay Gruden didn't want to inherit RG3. And any team, when he eventually gets released, because you know he's not getting a big contract. Did he already get a big contract?
No, they didn't give him a big contract. I think they picked up the option. I think he was one of the only ones of those second-year guys, which you had Luck, you had Tannehill, you had RG3, and you had Wilson. Those three, you know, that are just coming. They were all drafted in the same year. What was that, 2012, right? I have that right? Yeah. Yeah, all of the three now have contracts except for all of the four except for RG3. They just picked up his option. That was it.
Well, RG3 is not going to – I don't expect RG3 to get a big franchise quarterback contract, especially with the way that he's been playing. I understand that he may not deserve to be ridiculed as much as he is because the Redskins have really not done their part in making him work out. But the simple fact is this is a results-driven league, and as a result – he's not going to get his big contract because since the first year, RG3 has been miserable as far as his play goes. You can cite whatever reasons you want to. The simple fact is people don't care about that. They want to see wins, losses. They want to see quarterback rating. If you're not good enough, you're out.
All right. Well, let's switch it to a quarterback that we do think is doing the right things and is earning his money. That's Tannehill, man. I think he's just looking... He's looking pretty sharp. He's looking even pretty sharp on the deep ball, even though there was the two last night, the one he missed, and then the one that just was one of the best balls I've ever seen him throw, and Cameron dropped it. Unreal.
It happens, man. The deep ball is not meant to be a high-percentage throw anyway, and...
True.
I mean, the first one against Kenny Stills, that turned out to be a flag against Carolina, so that was brought forward, so that didn't matter. So, but he did overthrow him, and then the other one to Jordan Cameron was a beautiful pass. He just couldn't reel it in, and that's actually been a problem in training camp, as far as I'm aware of. Jordan Cameron has had issues with drops this past camp, so that might be hopefully that's not a sign of things to come, because we need Cameron to be his Pro Bowl self, especially since we lost Charles Clay to Buffalo, even though he's not really doing anything there because, you know, they don't have a quarterback. So I am of the mentality that this is finally the year that they've put together a team that fits what Tannehill does. They brought in Kenny Stills. He's very smooth in route running. He's got some speed to him, so that's a good thing. He has the ability to catch. He can high point. He knows what he's doing. You got Landry coming back. You got Greg Jennings, very smooth in route running. He's very quick on his feet. He can. Mm-hmm. He's a wily veteran who knows how to outsmart his opponents rather than out-physical them. And you get... Rashard Matthews, who's always been a great receiver, but for one reason or another has not been allowed to see the field, something about Philbin not getting along with him. And supposedly, though, that is no longer the case. So, you know, too little, too late. 1 year of Rashard Matthews, and then he's out. And we drafted Devontae Parker, who I wouldn't have an issue if they decided to give him a red shirt freshman year and just let him learn and develop on the sidelines so that we can let that foot heal so he's ready to go in the long run rather than try to rush him back like so many fans are wanting to. They want to play with their new toy. No. Patience, just like with Tannehill. Patience. Let it come. It will. We know what he can do. We saw it in his college years. Just give him some time to get healthy, and then we can work with it. It's really that simple. And this is a result of – Tannehill's play is a result of putting together a team that now fits the mold of what he is good at. He's not going to throw the bomb every five plays, so that's not Mike Wallace. That doesn't fit what Mike Wallace does. But now he has players that do what he needs them to do. He needs them to go up and get the ball, give him some confidence that they'll make a play no matter what, and – if they miss one every once in a while, it's not going to shatter his confidence because they know that he knows that it's pretty much a fluke if they do miss it. They don't miss the ball very often. They usually get that catch, and that is why you're seeing all this improved play from Tannehill. It's confidence. It's sharp. It's mental sharpness. It's this feeling of these guys have my back, and I'm not going to be hearing 5 minutes from now more calls for more passes to be thrown my way. Now you have guys who are supportive. They see him as a leader. They're willing to follow him into battle. And as a result, we have our franchise quarterback.
And the one thing that made me concerned originally when Devontae Parker went out was I felt like they really wanted to go out and improve his red zone targets. Jordan Cameron being one of those, which, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, we're going to see how that goes when the games start. I mean, Greg Jennings was a trade-off for Hartline, and we know Greg Jennings, even though older, has caught way more touchdowns than Hartline. He just wasn't a red zone threat at all. And, you know, Parker as well. And I really felt that those were the red zone threats, but I know this is going to sound strange. Well, it's not really going to sound strange, but I've really identified two new red zone threats that in Landry, and call me crazy, I'm going to give the hillbilly toot toot, and Damian Williams too. I mean, Damian Williams, it feels like when they get into the red zone, they're trusting in this guy. I saw it in the scrimmage. We talked about it in the practice. The first practice we saw it a little bit. We definitely saw it in the scrimmage, big time. And in the preseason too. I mean, they're not afraid to hand it off and or throw it to Damian Williams when they get in the red zone.
And that's the mentality they should be. The reason why Jarvis Landry is a good red zone threat is simply because if you throw it, if you throw it his way, he's not going to stop until he makes a play on that ball. If he does, he's going to berate himself for missing it, and he's going to try even harder the next time. You don't really need size helps, but it isn't necessarily. It isn't necessary. As long as you know how you can fight for it, if you can make sure that you can get in there, then that's all you need. And Damian Williams is the better weapon out of the backfield. Lamar Miller is the better running back by far.
Yes.
But as an overall weapon, I'm going to give the edge to Damian Williams, because where Williams does not he doesn't have Miller's speed and his initial power so much, because mm-hmm. Miller's stronger than people give him credit for. Williams has that last factor that he can catch the football out of the backfield, and that is what makes him a better overall weapon. So when you see Williams back there, you have the defense to think, okay, is he going to run it? Is he going to catch it? What are we going to do with him? And should we be worried about this guy Landry over here, or Cameron over here, or Stills over there, or Jennings over here? There are so many options to go to that unless you have somebody who's being able to cover everybody on the field at once, then you're still in trouble, because if not, Tannehill can just run it in himself. That's part of the advantage that he has of being a dual threat. So there really is so many options that if you can just find the right one, you should be scoring touchdowns every time. The first drive of the game against the Panthers was a little bit disappointing. They didn't make it. They had to punt it off. But then the next two drives resulted in touchdowns. So what else can you ask for from your offense? If you want to talk about the offensive line didn't give Tannehill enough protection, that he was getting closed in on, well, let me just say this much. The fact that Tannehill was still able to get the Dolphins down the field for those two touchdowns despite the bad protection should give you some confidence in your quarterback that we're going to be okay even if he is in trouble now, because he's learning how to deal with that pressure.
I was just going to say that, excuse me, it is apparent that he has just become used to, and I know it sounds weird, and a lot of it is probably from this D-line in practice continuously getting into our O-line. He is just used to throwing the ball with pressure up the middle, people in his face, someone coming off the edge. He's really getting better at throwing the ball under pressure. I think a lot of it is because he's getting used to it. I know it sounds crazy. So if you give him a little bit of time, he's really going to slice you up. But even if we face a team like, say, Buffalo, or when we face a team like Buffalo, Jets, some of those teams with the stronger D-lines, I just feel like, yeah, there's going to be pressure on them. Our D-lines, our O-line's not going to hold those guys off all the time. Most O-lines won't. But Tannehill can still deliver the ball. I mean, he just seems to be able to do that.
He can do it. He just needs the opportunity to prove himself. Now, here's the thing that we still don't know about. Can he do it in the fourth quarter when everything is on the line? It sounds terrible, because that whole clutch thing, it gets on people's nerves, and I understand why, because really it is about an execution of 11. But people are looking at him when things go wrong, and if he decides to make the wrong decision, then what's going to happen? I'm still not sure if Tannehill is willing to make the tougher throw that'll actually get him the first down instead of doing a check down throw short that is going to require somebody like Landry to juke three guys and then get into the first down. So far, it's looking like he is, but I'm not going to be convinced until I see it a little bit more. You got to be patient about these kinds of things. You can't automatically get one game and assume, I guess he's the guy. I guess he's learned his lesson now. No, let's see one more time. Let's see if he can do it again and again and again. Consistency is his issue. He'll have one really good game, and then he'll have one really bad game. So far, he hasn't really had any bad games, which is a really good thing. So
I wouldn't even say you've seen more than me. I wouldn't even say he's really had a bad practice. He's made some mistakes, but I wouldn't say he's had a bad overall practice yet this year.
Yeah, he hasn't had as far as like actual performances go, like overall performances, he hasn't really had a bad one per se. More like bad for him. So the fact that you can have a bad for him proves that we've gotten to a point where we can trust Tannehill to be good most of the time. It's not so much that, he had a good game last week, so this week must be the week he's bad. No, now we expect it to be good all the time. And that's something you want in your franchise quarterback. This is something you want to deal with. And yes, I understand people are complaining about the dinks and dunks some more. But listen, if it's working, why are you complaining? Do you want it to be exciting, or do you want it to actually score points? Because so far, this whole dinking and dunking deal has scored the Dolphins 3 touchdowns in 2 preseason games in very limited action. So
3 touchdowns and 4 drives, if I'm not mistaken.
3 touchdowns and 4, yeah, 3 touchdowns and 4 drives. I'm not complaining. That sounds really good to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I agree.
Now, if they want to bring up the level of defense that they're facing, fine. Valid. Let's see what happens when he faces a real one, because the Chicago Bears defense is yuck, and the Panthers, while solid, were missing 3 of their starting defensive linemen, so that gave them somewhat of a break. Okay, so let's wait and see what happens with a real defense, but so far, just based on what I've seen so far, I'm really impressed, and I think it's going to do well if he continues his level of play.
I agree. So let's just see what happens. I mean, I think he's going to play well this year. I think it's obvious at this point to me that he's going to play well this year. But I agree with you, the fourth quarter and in December, if we don't play well then it's kind of back to the same thing. But, he looks really sharp, man. He looks consistent, so we can't complain. So let's talk a little bit about that defense. I don't actually have true numbers on this, but it looked to me like I think they've given up the full starting unit has given up 3 points in 2 games total, if I've got that right.
Let me think. I don't remember them giving up the first starting unit. They only had a few drives. They only had like 2 drives for the first game, and then
yeah, and they gave up nothing. It was like a 3 and out and like a 4 or 5 and out. But of course, it was the Bears. And the second game I thought the first field goal might have been given up on them, but I'm not 100% sure. Stuffing the competition. I mean, stuffing them.
Yeah, 1 field goal and however many drives works for me.
Yeah, I mean, so you got an offense scoring 3 touchdowns and 4 drives. You got a defense giving up 3 points and 4 or 5 or 6 drives. I mean, look at the quarterback completion percentage against these guys. Look at the running stats. Look at all of them. They can't run on us. They can't throw on us. I don't know what anybody's looking for here. And I've actually seen people on Twitter complaining about this, complaining, saying our team is bad or we're not good or this. I've seen a bunch of different stuff. Oh, I've got concerns. I'm like, what are your concerns? What more do you want out of these guys?
Well, if your concern is depth, then that is a valid concern. But if you're complaining about the starters for some reason, then you seriously have an issue. If anybody is complaining about the actual starting lineup, then I don't think they're really Dolphins fans. I don't know what it is they're looking for. But if you're concerned about the players beneath them, then yes, that's valid. Because the Dolphins do have something of a depth issue.
See, I don't know. And I'm glad we're going to get into that. We're going to segue to that right now. I think that I think the O-line has a depth issue. No doubt. And perhaps we don't need to go get Evan Mathis to, you know, because it's so dire at our starting guard spot, which now maybe we think it may not be, but
it might be fixed.
Yeah, but perhaps it wouldn't be bad to go get somebody just to help with the depth. I mean, if you got Mathis, then you really have got this thing fixed, and you've added depth to your team automatically because one of the guys that would have started is now a backup.
Yeah, but you got to be careful that you don't break him again.
When you say break him,
Dallas Thomas.
Oh, okay. I got you. No, I'm not even talking about Dallas Thomas.
Mathis would be playing at left guard.
Mm-hmm.
Do not break him, Thomas, again by moving him over to right guard, assuming he can make the switch. People think making a switch over from left to right is so easy. Ask Juwan James if it was easy to move from right tackle to left tackle. That should tell you everything you need to know.
That's true. Now, that's a good point. That's a good point. But I'd like to see us maybe go out and get another lineman, maybe a guy that could play a little left tackle or another guard, something just for some depth, because right now it's hurting the team. In my opinion, and I tweeted this out last night, it is hurting this team's ability to evaluate running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends because of some very poor protection issues and some bad backup quarterback play. So Matt Moore, so my question for you, is Matt Moore playing bad right now because he's got horrible protection in front of him, or is he just off his game right now? He's never been a great preseason or practice game anyway, but we've seen him come in and play well. If he was playing with the ones, would he be playing better?
If he was playing with the ones, absolutely. Who wouldn't be playing better with the ones? That's kind of what the whole point of it is. If you have your starting offensive lineman out there, you get better protection. You get your starting wide receivers out there, it's better support. Matt Moore is dealing with Andre Walker and Donald Hawkins at the tackle spots, and I don't even know. No, not Andre Walker. I'm sorry. Jeff Linkenbach is currently the backup's backup at left tackle. So you're dealing with that, and you're dealing with receivers like Hazel, who is, while good, is nowhere near the likes of Kenny Stills or those guys. You have, we used to have Michael Preston. He was released early, so maybe, I don't know, maybe they did it so that Carolina could get a hold of him because they need wide receiver help. But and you got Laron Bird, who somebody said, like, again, I have to call him out again. Omar said that was Matt Moore's favorite target. No, it wasn't. It's pretty obvious who Matt Moore's favorite target is, and his name is not Laron Bird. Sorry, Hurricane Man, but that's not how it works.
Who's her? Like, is it Hurricane Man, or are you talking about Caneology?
No, it's Caneology. It's like Laron Bird's a former Hurricane. So yeah, of course, Matt Moore's his favorite target. Laron Bird, former Hurricane. He's awesome. No, Matt Hazel. Don't act like it's someone else. Matt Hazel is the favorite. Or maybe he gets a new favorite every game. In this game, it happened to be Matt Hazel, but it certainly wasn't Laron Bird. In fact, I don't think Bird saw much action at all.
Yeah, I agree. I just thought I'm going to skip ahead 2 seconds. A little bit later, I've got a bunch of questions and comments from some people for the episode. But okay. One of them was from somebody from Justin Bowl or Bowell. I don't know how to pronounce your name, Justin. Sorry. And his question was, where did Preston go? Again, of course, he asked this before we knew he was released. Where did Preston go? Looked good in camp, but hasn't done much in preseason. But literally, probably about 45 seconds ago while you were talking, Lewis, he tweeted me and said, "Welp, I guess I jinxed him." I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, maybe you did. No, I don't think you jinxed him, man. You asked a valid question, Justin, because Preston started out well, and he managed to make some good plays, but he kind of dropped off as time went on because guys like Matt Hazel were making more plays. I guess you could say Preston turned out to be another Legato Nani, but I'm not willing to go that far because he can still help some team somewhere, unlike Nani, who didn't really do much of anything. So the only thing I can think of with Preston is that maybe the Dolphins released him knowing that we wouldn't have room for him, especially with Hazel still there. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to let him latch onto a team somewhere because that's the classy thing to do when the Dolphins are a first-class organization. So that's a possibility. Preston has done okay in practice, but he hasn't done anything spectacular. And in preseason games, the majority of the times that Preston is playing, he's not playing with Tannehill and those guys like he was when he was making plays before. He's playing with Matt Moore, the second team offensive line, the second team running backs, the second team everything, and it turns into a mess because unless Matt Moore can find the time to throw and he actually finds him in the open field, then it's not going to work. Matt Moore is a gunslinger who you can either ride or die with. There is no – you're basically playing Russian roulette. Either you're going to win and you're going to win big, or you're going to get beat down and you're going to get beat down hard. So at this point, with what Matt Moore is working with, we're getting the you're going to get beat down hard version of Matt Moore. And that's also taking into consideration that they actually scored a touchdown last night with Matt Moore at quarterback. So even that in itself is – something of a conundrum, because you're looking at it and thinking, well, is Matt Moore just a bad quarterback? No, he's not. He's still one of the better backups in the league. It's just the same thing we were talking about with Tannehill. You can't take away that. You can't take that away from Moore. You can't make the excuse for Tannehill that he has no protection, he has no weapons and all that stuff, and then take away that excuse for Matt Moore. I'm sorry. You got to be fair about it.
No, I got you. But I know that people are saying, and I think I've even heard you say, that this team may have a depth issue.
It does.
I disagree, because you got to look at a 53-man roster, and mm-hmm. if you make a 53-man roster, you could honestly question heavily probably 5, 6, 7 guys. I mean, I say probably 45 guys. I mean, you're only going to be active about 47, 48 guys, something like that anyway. I mean, I think what we're questioning are guys that are not even going to be active, and definitely guys who are not even going to be on the team anyway. I think where the depth issue comes in is that O-line. I mean, if you're talking about MBT and Josh Freeman, they're not making the team anyway, regardless of how they play. We're not keeping three or four quarterbacks.
Well, I don't think quarterback is an issue either, so that's not even an issue for me.
Quarterback's not an issue at depth. No. Wide receiver's not an issue at depth.
Nope.
Running back's not an issue at depth.
I don't believe so, but other people think otherwise, so that's fine.
I say no way, in my opinion. So then you really come down to O-line, which we know is an issue. I don't think there's a question there. And tight end. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. I think that tight end might just be an issue all the way around right now. I don't think that we've seen stellar tight end play. I've liked some of the things that Deion Sims does, but then haven't liked other things he's done. Haven't really seen what we were hoping to see from Jordan Cameron. Let's face it. I mean, tight end just might be a problem all the way up and down. We released Lynch. I mean, you got Robinson and Stoneburner. They haven't been anything impressive, but they've been mostly playing with MBT and Freeman. I mean, and Freeman, they might as well just cut him. He is not helping you evaluate players right now. I'm sorry. He is hurting your ability to evaluate your team.
Well, a lot of the depth is on the defensive side of the ball, but I agree with the offensive line and the tight end spots, because Sims is not an every down player in the sense that Tannehill's just going to look for him every play. Tannehill's going to look for who he trusts explicitly more often than not. That's Landry, that has become Jennings, that has become Rishard Matthews, because in practice, those are the three guys that he looks for more often than anybody else. So the fact that Cameron and Sims have not done anything spectacular, I'm going to attribute some of that to the fact that Tannehill just doesn't appear to be looking for them, because he's built a camaraderie with the other three guys I just mentioned. So that's going to have something to do with their lack of production, because you can't produce at those positions if somebody doesn't throw you the ball.
Yeah, and there's only one tight end on the field at a time, and I think maybe...
Well, not always. Sometimes they do two tight ends.
But rare. I mean, let's face it. If you broke down 32 teams, the percentage of how many of plays with two tight ends on offense, the Dolphins are in like the bottom three of that. I mean, they just don't do it very often. And at least that's what we've seen in the past. And the practices I've been to, and you've been to them all, so you've been to more than me. The practices I've been to, the scrimmage, I think I noticed one play where it was done. One play, the whole scrimmage. It's just not it's not something they go with a lot. And good thing, because we don't think really have the tight ends to
Here's another theory. Laser is saving all the fancy stuff for the regular season.
Yeah, but I think the fancy stuff are some of the stuff we've seen, like Earl Mitchell in at fullback, Pouncey catching touchdowns, like that.
Okay, Ron, wait a minute, Ron, that's not a big deal to me, because they did it one time and it never happened again, so I don't think that was really so much. That was just that was during a mix-and-match day, and you said, you know what, let's just try this, because why the heck not?
There are practices that we don't see. There are practices that the rest of the press doesn't see or isn't allowed to talk about. And that's a fact. And those practices really haven't quite happened yet. They're getting ready to happen in the next few weeks. And that's when they bring in some of their more secret stuff and do some of those things. I think we're going to see some trick plays, but I think the offense as is, Tannehill, he was one of the last year, one of the highest percentage throws to wide receivers in the league. I don't think that's changing this year.
No, it's not going to change because he's still going to do the dink and dunk, and I don't have an issue with the dink and dunk because that's the same kind of offense that Tom Brady runs. He just throws the ball and lets his receivers do their jobs. That's I don't have a problem with that. So
me neither.
That's going to help his completion percentage, of course.
All right, so let's bring it to the defense with a depth situation. I think we have depth issues at linebacker, especially a lot of that. It might be injury, but even then, maybe there's still questions. You know, like right now you got an undrafted free agent in your second linebacker unit in Vigil, which he's playing well, but you had the same thing last year in McCain, an undrafted free agent at linebacker. That seems to be a trend for us. I think safety now, I don't know. What do you think? You feel like safety is a depth issue or not? It wasn't before Delmas went down, but now without Delmas, what's your thoughts there?
Without Delmas, there is a depth issue because once you get past Walt Akins and Michael Thomas, who are the two backups, you don't have anybody.
You got Jones, Cedric, you got Kovacs, you got Thompson.
Jones, Thompson, and Kovacs are all special teams players. Don Jones is a great gunner, but as a safety, he's nothing special. Kovacs is just kind of there, and Cedric Thompson has shown so far that he is not ready for the big time. Absolutely not. He needs a lot of time to develop.
All right, so to keep from repeating questions, I actually had somebody who asked that question. Oh, now I got
to
find it.
So shout out his name so we can at least acknowledge that he asked it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find it on here. Sorry, hold on one second. Oh, it was Max Himmelrich from the deep end, miami.com.
Oh, hey,
what's up, Max? He says, has Cedric Thompson come out of hiding or is he still in witness protection? I think he's still in witness protection.
He's still in witness protection. He was ugly that last game. In fact, I cringed every time I saw him around a play. He missed one tackle that went for an end zone touchdown. Cedric Thompson needs a lot of time to develop before anything happens because he hasn't done anything spectacular in practice. He obviously hasn't done anything good in games, so he's going to need some time to develop before we even get close to the point where we can talk about him as an actual contributor.
Yeah, what scares me is when, and again, it's my 53, so maybe it shouldn't scare me, but when I initially did the 53 roster before the camp even started, I did not have Jones, Kovacs, or even Cedric Thompson, who we drafted, making the 53. So that kind of makes me nervous that maybe one or two of those guys now may end up on the roster.
Well, I expect Don Jones to make the roster simply because he's an excellent gunner on special teams, and that's something that we need. He and Michael Thomas together are going to be really dangerous on special teams, and God knows we need special teams help.
Okay. All right. So we know we've got issues at linebacker. We've got issues at safety. What about depth with cornerback? Well,
cornerback is actually the bigger problem for me.
Yeah, because now you got Taylor that is hurt as well again. We don't know what have you heard any more today about that injury?
As far as I'm concerned, no news is good news because we heard that Bobby McCain was more hurt, and then when we heard Louis Delmas got hurt, we immediately heard the next day that it was a torn ACL and all this stuff, blah, 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 blah. When Jordan Tripp got hurt at linebacker, let's make the comparison. When Tripp got hurt, we never actually heard what the severity was. All we knew was that he got hurt, he walked off the field, and then the next day he was on crutches after the game, and then the next day he's limping, and then the day after that he's walking just fine. So my opinion, no news is good news. I think Jamar Taylor is fine. He said as such. So, and same goes for Bobby McCain. He's downplaying his injury. So that in itself is not my problem. My issue is with the depth at cornerback is that you need at least three corners to be playing to be able to start the game because you need Brent Grimes on one side. So if Grimes goes down, the secondary is screwed anyway because there's no one out there who's better than Grimes. And then you have Taylor / Bryce McCain on the other side. Mm-hmm. Then you have Taylor / Bryce McCain in the nickel.
Yes.
So, and then you get, and then the next guy below that is Bobby because Will Davis has not been doing anything other than making tackles because he can't cover for anything, which it hurts me to say because I like Will Davis a lot. He's a great guy. But he's not built to be a cornerback. He's actually built to be a safety. And if he would be more physical, then he would be a really good safety because he jumps routes like no one else I've ever seen. So, but Bobby is not built to be on the boundary. And that's the problem. Bobby is built as a slot man. So if Taylor goes down and Bryce moves outside, then Bobby is by default the nickel corner. And if one of those three goes down, then we don't have anybody.
Then we get into what happened last year.
Then we need to give RJ Stanford a call and see what's going on with him.
See if he's still at UPS. No, I don't know that. I don't know that he was at UPS. That's just what you always hear. You always hear about players. Oh, I had a job at UPS. Or they were selling insurance. It's always one or the other.
Or being an Uber driver.
Or an Uber driver. So pretty much, nice. So pretty much the only position on defense we don't feel uncomfortable with at the depth is the D-line. I'm assuming you don't have issues with the D-line depth.
I don't really, but listen. But here's what I am a little concerned. Defensive end more than anything else, because you got Wake, you got Vernon, you got Shelby, and you got Fide. That's fine. Two players, two backups. Okay. But who do you got after that? Emmanuel Deke or Dieke or however you say his name?
I don't know that they keep much more than that. They only kept 8 or 9 total D-line last year, like 4 ends and 4 tackles. And when you talk about active on game day, you're not going to get more than Shelby, Fide, Vernon, and obviously I'm missing somebody there, and Wake. And then you've got in the middle, Sue, Mitchell. Phillips and then
C.J. Mosley.
I don't even know if it's Mosley, man. He's kind of not playing so well. It may end up being Francis or Johnson or something.
Nope.
Now, I'm telling you, when I did my 53-man roster, I had neither Francis nor Johnson on the team. I had it as Sue, Mitchell, Mosley, and Phillips. But
that much is going to be correct, Ron. I'll tell you that much right now.
Well, then let's – but it, if I'm not mistaken, last year I think they only ended up keeping 8 total anyway. So there you go. The rest of the guys weren't going to make the team anyway. And it definitely, if another one of those guys, let's say they decide to keep 9 total, they keep an extra D end or they keep an extra tackle for whatever reason, they're not going to be active on game day. One of those guys is just not even going to be there. So I'm not really concerned about it. My personal opinion, I'm not concerned about players who won't be active on game day and or won't be on this team anyway.
The secondary is an issue,
big time.
So are the linebackers.
Big time.
So that's
big
but
time.
Again, it's the execution of all 11 players on the field at a time. That's why you say that. That's why people say that the Dolphins have a depth issue. It's not just about the guys at D line. It's not just about the quarterbacks. It's not just about the wide receiver. It's about the whole collective unit as a whole coming together to make it happen. And you're only as strong as your weakest link. So if you saw how Will Davis was getting picked on in the last game. And that becomes a problem. It's like when Tom Brady would pick apart Philip Wheeler. Everywhere Wheeler went on the field, that's where the ball was going because he knew that Wheeler could not do anything about it. So that can become a problem.
Yeah, but Philip Wheeler was a starter. Will Davis is like last man up, break in case of glass. I mean, he's not going to see if he makes his 53, which unfortunately, as much as I like him, I didn't put him on my 53. He's not going to hardly see any playing time. That's the thing. So, I mean, we look at 11 guys that are backups and we say, oh, they're horrible. But maybe one or two, three here kind of sneak in and out and play some time. I think you have enough to go with. But it's the injury problem.
That's when we're in trouble. Right, and injuries happen every year. We were hoping Jamar Taylor wouldn't get hurt, but he did. We were hoping that Will Davis didn't get hurt, but we did. But these guys get hurt. Cole Meese is still hurt, or maybe he's not hurt really because he looks like he's walking around just fine. I don't know why they're keeping him out. Maybe they're saving him for the regular season.
Yeah, I think they're just playing cautious. They know what they got with him.
Tripp seems to be walking around just fine, so I guess they're being cautious with him. I guess Bobby McCain's going to be played cautious with as well, so... There's going to be a lot more bad play coming our way from the secondary since those guys are not going to be playing. Grimes didn't play at all against the Panthers, so there's that.
You don't need him to play. I mean, he's a healthy scratch. I'm nervous how much they're playing Sue. I hate to say it, but I was.
Sue wants to play.
I get it. And there's a couple games now where they've had one player where I'm like, why is he still in there? Game one was Jelani Jenkins was in like towards the end of the second quarter when the rest of the starters are sitting down. I'm like, why is Jelani Jenkins still in this game? Please take him out. Yeah, I get it. I get that they want to play, but they're going to get to play in about 3 weeks. They're going to get to play all they can handle. Make sure they don't get hurt.
Sue is using the preseason as a way to get the real rust off because he can't go all out against his guys because he'll kill them. So And Sue has said as much that this is the this. He said that I don't feel like I've gotten back to my full strength yet. I need to play more. I need more time to play. We need more time to evaluate ourselves. He wants to play, and the same goes for Jarvis Landry, who was another guy that stayed in for a very long time on starting on offense. That dude has a fire like no one else, and he wants to be on that football field at all times. He never wants to get taken off the field, and I can appreciate that much. I understand the concerns, but hey, if the kid wants to play, then let him play. He hasn't shown any signs of being like an injury monger or anything like that. Just let him ball out. He wants to get better, and the only way you can get better is if you're on the field. So don't wait until the regular season to let him play.
Okay, I got a question for you. I'm glad I wrote it down and I almost forgot, but when you said something about dialing it back a little, the rumor / article, whatever it was, that said that the Dolphins were asked by the Carolina coaching staff to please dial back the pass rush in the second practice. Where do we know where that came from? A secret source, I assume.
It came from the Charlotte beat writers. It's true.
It came from the Charlotte beat writers, but we can't know what their source was. But was their source Dolphins or was it Carolina?
It was Carolina, from what I could tell. And I'll just be honest with this, man. From what I could tell, it seemed like the Dolphins were not going all out on defense, at least for the defensive line part of it. And I was wondering, like, why are they going so slow? Well, now we know.
Interesting. That's really interesting. So they were kind of playing not necessarily walkthrough speed, but they were not going all out.
Sue was not punching people in the mouth. Let's just say that.
I mean, this isn't an unheard of thing, but what's hilarious about it is the fact that the only way they felt they could get a true evaluation was for them to dial it back. Now, if you think about it, well, in the game, the players aren't dialing back, yeah, but in the games they play, they don't face a D-line like the Dolphins. I mean, look at their division and look at the teams they're going to face. They're not facing any of the AFC East teams, which have, you know, three of the top D-lines in the league. I don't know that they play Houston. They may, but I don't know that they play Houston. They've got a pretty good D-line. I mean, so I get that. I know in preseason, a lot of times they'll do this on special teams. Sometimes they'll say, and this year I haven't seen it as much, but they'll say, don't kick it into the back of the end zone. Like the coaches will get together, just kick it to the one so we can get an evaluation of each other's punt and kickoff coverage. You know, that's something that's not uncommon, but I just think it just goes to show how dominant that D line is for Miami.
That D-line is nasty in the end.
So nasty,
it should be dominant to a point where people are not going to want to play us. And that is going to help a lot with the depth issues, because obviously the secondary and the linebackers are still an issue. But again, the defense, we've been saying all along that the defensive line was going to help with those issues.
Oh, for sure. And even if, you know, you have an injury and you got to bring a guy in that isn't, like, we're questioning, like the Michael Thomas's, Aikens, even Don Jones or something like that, or at linebacker or whatever, that D-line helps cover up, helps mask some of those
It covers
opportunities.
Over a multitude of sins.
Yes, it does. It does for sure, man. It does. So that's how are you feeling about this team, man? I just watch us play. I watch the starters play, and I'm just feeling like the league doesn't see us coming. And I don't necessarily mean the teams. I'm talking about the fans who are not fans of Miami, the media, whether it's local media of other teams, national media. I just don't think they see it coming. I just think that the Dolphins are going to surprise this year.
Well, hopefully they will, because at this point, like, all that stuff about Philbin making a concerted effort to connect with his players better, all the dancing and the white tuxedo and the rapping and the watching of the movies and making friends with his players, all that is terrific, but if it doesn't translate into wins, he's not going to be around to enjoy it. His head will roll.
That's true, man. It's true. I don't know. I don't, if this, okay, this comes up with a question I was originally going to ask, but then I thought, well, we've got enough stuff to talk about, but I want to ask it. And I can kind of give you three different scenarios, and you could tell me, and you could just, prophesize here, if you will. So let's say this team goes, and I don't think it'll happen, obviously, but let's say this team goes like 4-10, 5-11. Then my question for you is, what happened, and who was to blame? You know what I mean? Like, what happened to this team if that were to happen?
Tannehill tore his ACL, man. What else could Matt Moore hurt, and then Matt Moore hurt his throwing shoulder. Like, for that much of a drop off, it would have to be something really drastic. Because even if Sue goes down, they're not going to go 4-12 or whatever.
Okay, so it had to be extremely injury related. Okay,
it would have to be MBT leading the team into battle. That would be the only thing that could create such a problem like that. Like,
so that's good. So that, to me, that spells confidence in this roster in general. Okay, so let's say we go 8-8. What do you think happened?
If they go 8-8, mm-hmm. it's because I would think that the offensive line failed to keep Tannehill protected. I don't think it needs to be a great offensive line. The laser offense is built to get the ball out quickly, and that's just part of how it works. But that would be one of the other things. The other thing that might be an issue is if it turns out that the secondary fell on its face.
Even with the D-line as strong as it is.
D-line is as strong as it is, but if you have a crappy secondary, it's going to be crappy, and people are going to pick on you. You saw, Joe Webb, of all people, picking on Will Davis like it was no big deal, and we still had some depth on that D-line. So if you have somebody that can be picked on, you brought this up, actually. Brady picked on Wheeler, who was a starter.
Yes.
So
Wheeler was garbage. They had to take him off the field eventually. I mean, that was their game plan all along, man. They knew, I'm going after Wheeler because that guy sucks. I mean, that's
correct.
That's bottom line, Belichick and Brady were just sitting there, just probably laughing when they got together.
So you watch the guys who are in coverage. We still had a great D-line. We still had Wake. We still had Vernon. And Audric and Starks were there causing havoc in the middle. I was not going to be on Sue's level, of course, but they were still really good. But they couldn't keep Brady and those guys from picking on Wheeler to the point where it was just ugly to watch. Our defensive line and our defense had managed to keep Aaron Rodgers from doing anything spectacular all game, and one bad play where Wheeler was picked on by the greatest quarterback in the NFL gave us a loss. So, yeah, it hurts. It hurts to think about it, doesn't it? But it just goes to show that it takes more than a defensive line to make the defense work. Again, it's execution of 11. The defensive line is set. Great. But it's only going to be able to help so much. You need to have at least decent players out there covering all the guys who are going to be running around out there. And if it turns out to be Will Davis, then I fear that he's going to be picked on all season long. And I don't want it to get to that point.
But you got to get deep to get to Davis. Or you got to bypass Bobby McCain. One or the other.
But you brought up Bobby again. Bobby is a slot guy. He's not playing outside. The guy who is playing outside is Tony Lippett, and he is not ready for that kind of a responsibility.
No, I agree. But now let's look at let's give our secondary five guys, because you agree, obviously, I've heard you say it. You need five guys because of the nickel cornerback spot. You got to have three cornerbacks and two safeties.
I would like to have seven, but that's just me.
Well, I'm just saying, on the field, a lot of times, you're going to see five guys. Yeah, you'd love to go seven deep, but you're not playing seven at one time.
Talking about five guys.
Grimes is a no-brainer. Rashad Jones is a no-brainer, and I hope they leave him at strong safety. Don't move him to free safety. Please leave him at strong safety. My opinion. What do you think?
I think he needs to stay at strong safety. That's where he's good.
That's where he's good.
Don't move people around.
Yeah, I agree. So then you've got I say they feel more comfortable with Bryce McCain, and they're going to put him on the boundary. What do you think?
I would prefer it was Taylor, because Taylor's built to be on the boundary, and Bryce McCain's specialty is in the slot, because that's where he's at his best. So if that's where he's at his best, that's where you play him, because he's going to function there.
Okay,
so
let's do it then. Let's put Taylor at the boundary and McCain at the
Bryce McCain at the slot.
Bryce McCain, yes, at the slot.
Bryce is a slot guy.
Okay, and then Akins at free safety.
Akins is the free safety.
But let's say they're going to give up the bigger play, more aggressive style of Akins, and play it safe like Chris Clemens style, which is that was like the optimal, hey, I don't want any mental mistakes, but he's really not going to give you a lot of big plays guy. Chris Clemens, that's Michael Thomas. So let's say it's those five guys. I mean, do you feel uncomfortable with those five guys? I don't. You got one big-time Pro Bowler, top 40 player in the NFL, and Jones is kind of on the line, could be a Pro Bowler.
Well, you actually named six, because you named Brent Jamar, which is two, and then the two starting safeties, which is four. And then the guy in the slot is 5, and then you brought up Michael Thomas.
Yeah, so well, I'm going to just throw Akins out of it. I'm just saying it's going to be Akins or Thomas. So let's say we throw Akins out of the mix, and we go safe and play Thomas.
Akins slash Thomas.
Yes, Akins slash Thomas. Let's say we just say, no, we're not going to do Akins. We're going to do Thomas. We just feel safer. We got enough other guys between Jones and Grimes that can make plays.
Okay, that's fine.
So I those 5 that. Guys, how do you feel that's about that? I feel good about it.
That starting secondary, I don't have a problem with. It's the guys underneath because, okay, let's say Brent goes down for 4 games. What happens?
But name me a team that has a top 40 NFL player somewhere on their team and that guy goes down and that is not going to hurt their team greatly. I mean, but you don't have another top 40 guy to replace him.
We don't need to name somebody like that because it hurts every team. But it's also going to hurt the Dolphins if it would happen. And you got to learn how to overcome that. Can you? I don't know if we can. Losing Brent would be devastating to the secondary. And whoever replaces Brent on that spot is going to be picked on a lot.
Yeah, probably. Because then you're going probably Taylor, Bryce, and Bobby's at the nickel. Yeah, that's a little bit scarier. It's scary without Grimes. Why he just needs to be a healthy scratch all preseason. Why risk it?
So let's say that Bryce gets hurt. If Bryce gets hurt and he's in the slot, then
you gotta put Bobby.
Bobby's gonna be in there.
Yeah.
And if Jamar gets hurt, Bryce moves outside and Bobby's still in the slot.
Mm-hmm.
But you better hope that nobody else gets hurt because after that,
Will Davis and Lippitt. Yeah.
If somebody else gets hurt when you have that lineup, you're in serious trouble.
No, I agree. But I mean, there's
and
only
injuries
so
happen a lot.
Yeah, they do happen, but there's only so much injury you can prepare for. There's only so many players deep you can be in all over your roster. I mean, where one team is not, like, for instance, I know there's a few, and I can't even think of them now. They talked about maybe Pittsburgh, perhaps was a team that, and they got linebackers like falling out of their ears. They don't want to do with it. You got teams out there like the Dolphins. I mean, the fifth wide receiver on Rashad Matthews on the Dolphins would be like the number one wide receiver in Carolina right now. I mean, he would. You know what I'm saying? Like every team is going to have some kind of mix like that where they're real deep someplace and they're shallow someplace else. Maybe Green Bay might be one of the few teams, and we're going to find out because Jordy Nelson is now, I don't know if you knew that, Jordy Nelson is now out for the year.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah.
Well, we think. Has there been a confirmed report yet or is it just speculation so far?
I heard reported on ESPN News. I was listening to it through Bluetooth on the way home from work. I saw that they said it was an ACL and he was out for the year.
Well, there you go, man. Like Jordan, but they still have Aaron Rodgers, so they can get past it.
Yeah,
Panthers can't because Cam is nowhere near Aaron Rodgers, but the Packers would be able to get by because they have Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, but
The Packers make it to the playoffs every year because they have Rodgers. It's not because their team is awesome. It's just because they have the best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, for sure. And having one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, no matter where you're deep or where you're not deep, anywhere in your roster, makes up for a whole lot of stuff, for sure. Mm-hmm. But we can pick this roster to death if we want. But we could probably, if we knew the 31 other teams, likely find places to pick those rosters to death if we want to save a couple. I mean, maybe like Seattle, Green Bay. I don't know. I think you could pick New England's. You could pick New England's starting secondary to death if you wanted to.
Devin McCourty, a cornerback, is not a pretty sight.
Yes. So, I mean,
he's an elite safety, but a crappy cornerback.
Yes. So there you go. So, I want to have 53 man deep, 47 at least active deep that we feel super confident on. I just don't know if that is ever going to be realistic very, very often on most teams. So, I mean, it doesn't make you feel any better about those positions. And yes, you are still screwed if something happens. But it's just not realistic to think that all 53 men are just going to be, oh, if this guy comes and we're ready with this guy and we don't blink an eye. I don't think that's realistic in the NFL, honestly.
It's I guess when you put it that way, it's not. But that's not going to stop people from worrying.
No, I'm not. When you sit there and you say it to me, it sounds ugly. Like I get nervous. It's please no more injuries. Just begging, no more injuries. All right, man. I'm gonna plug a couple things here. I'm gonna let you plug a little, and we're gonna wrap it up. How's that sound? Oh no, wait. Sorry.
We have our.
I got questions. Oh man, I'm so glad.
I was getting ready to answer people's questions because I'm a question answer. I love educating the fans.
Okay, so I've got some statements and some questions. Now this one from Mika Romero. He's from WatchNextYear.com. Is Hazel Altman or Preston's play? So let's say is Hazel or Altman's play going to force Miami to keep a six wide receiver?
I don't think Hazel is going to be good enough to warrant keeping him around at that point. I think the Dolphins are going to probably keep their five guys at wide receiver because those guys are like five deep and they can just take in whatever they need. Mm-hmm. The only thing that would make me think otherwise is if the Dolphins decide that tight end is no longer going to be a heavy factor. And I don't believe that they're going to – that I don't believe that it's not as going to be as – integrated as we think. I think that they're going to be integrated a lot more than we're seeing right now, simply because they're working on getting the receivers acclimated. They're still working on Kenny Stills, getting him back into the lineup. They're still just doing the basic offense, pretty much. There's nothing fancy. They may be trying to keep Jordan Cameron from getting concussioned again because, you know, they're saving him for later. They want to have everybody ready to go for the regular season, and there are some fragile guys in there. That's probably why Landry plays longer than everybody else, is because that guy is sturdy and he's not going to get hurt. It's like the guy just gets back up again, like Tannehill. So you're careful with Stills. They gave Greg Jennings a scratch because he's dealing with an elbow injury, and it's like, okay, keep our veteran out of there because we don't want him to get hurt. So I would say that it's a 70% chance that they go with just five wide receivers, because I have a feeling that the tight ends are going to get more work in when the regular season comes around than they're getting right now.
Okay, and on my initial 53, I had them just keeping five, so we'll see if that holds true, though. Okay, so Oscar Hazel from the Miami Pod, which I've mentioned many times on this show, and he's actually been on the show before.
Does Oscar want to hear what I have to say?
he has a comment on something. And he really has more of a comment, but I'm going to bring – I mean, he doesn't really have a question. It's more of a comment that I – he has – so far he's most impressed as far as I asked for a surprise guy. It's like, what's your surprise guy? So it isn't necessarily who's playing the best, but he says most impressed with Sam Brenner and interested to see what we will do at left tackle this week – because Fox is probably going to be out 5 days. So in practice, no Albert, no Fox. What are we doing at left tackle? So I guess it's Hawkins, or?
It's probably – okay, so it seems to me that the easy choice for the backup left tackle for Fox is probably going to be Jeff Linkenbach, because that's the guy who's been in there the whole time, and the only time that Linkenbach is not in there is if they moved him somewhere else or something, and then it turned into somebody like Donald Hawkins. And when Hawkins was in there, it was not pretty. So my guess would be it's going to be Linkenbach. As for Brenner, Brenner has moved up to the point where he's one of the second team centers. Him and McClendon seem to be fighting it out for that job. And I was actually shocked to see McClendon at center, because that seemed to come out of nowhere. McClendon hadn't even sniffed center, as far as I'm aware of, up until very recently. So I mean, Brenner, we've always liked what we can do, what we saw in Brenner, and we always thought that maybe he could be a starting guard if he just has more time to develop. But right now, he's a decent guard. I think he might be an answer if we run it out of depth somewhere else. So if Brenner turns out to be the second team center and we move on from J.D. Walton, please let us move on from J.D. Walton. So I like what I'm seeing from Brenner. He's moving up in the coach's eyes, so that's a good thing. And the other left tackle is most likely going to be Jeff Linkenbach, because that's the guy who's been getting the practice there ever since he made that move.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, so Matthew Knowles from some site called Fin Maniacs, or Contributor 2.
Yeah, I've never heard of that site. Where is that site?
I don't know. Some scrub site. No, I'm just kidding. So Matthew Knowles says he loves what he's seen so far from Billy Turner, but specifically – not necessarily about the consistency. He loves his, and you'll appreciate this, because this is the subject that actually brought us together, Lewis. He loves his strength and aggression. What say you about that?
that much is true. He's strong and he's aggressive. And the problem is so far is that that is turning out to be more of a hindrance than an attribute. Because he's so aggressive and because he wants to maul the guys in front of him, his pass protection is not as good as it could be. This is where the whole hand technique and footwork comes into play, because that's when you turn out to work on your how clean you are, how consistent you are, how good you are overall as a blocker, not so much as just a run blocker. You need to be able to pass protect too, and that's more about technique than anything else. It's kind of funny. Billy Turner and Dallas Thomas are I would say that they're opposites of each other. Turner is power, he's strength, he's aggression, and he'll run you over if he gets a good hit on you. Thomas is not as strong as Turner, and that has been shown, as he can't really play so much with power, but it seems that he's cleaned up his footwork and his hand technique to the point where he is getting all this good stuff. So it's kind of interesting how that's turned out, because now you have this finesse guy on the left spot, and you have this power guy in the right spot, and it turns out that the finesse is winning, because that's kind of how the zone blocking schemes work. It's more about finesse than strength. If we were running a power blocking scheme like the days of Jake Long and Richie Incognito and those guys, then I would say that Turner would be the better choice. So it's kind of funny how it works with the schemes, because if Thomas were playing in a power blocking scheme, he would still be terrible, because Thomas cannot block with power. Turner would be the better choice at that point, because that's what he does. He likes to block with power. So, but in the zone scheme, it's more about footwork and technique.
Okay. All right, I got three more, and these are not from writers. These are people on Twitter. All right, KC says, are we keeping three or four running backs this year? He sees Ajayi as the odd man out. But do we keep him just because he's a draft pick?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that they're going to pick four. But I'm going to have to add a little proviso to this, because I'm still not sure about this. If LaMichael James has another performance like he had the other night, then I would say that we'll keep four, because James has proven that, okay, I can do it. The game against the Bears was a fluke. Just watch me. Just give me another chance. And he did a lot better this time against the Panthers, who are arguably a better defense than the Bears to begin with. His returning is still, and it turned out that Christian Jones was actually a better returner than he was, at least for that game. So
my friend Keith will be very happy to hear that, by the way. Christian, he's been on this show before.
Christian Jones?
Yeah, he's a big Bama fan, so he loves Christian Jones.
Oh, okay, I see how it is. Okay. Alabama, roll tide.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, so that's the Alabama bias right there. But Christian Jones did a really good job returning, so LaMichael James might have to fight off him for the returning spot. And
I got to back up a little. That would mean keeping Christian Jones as a six wide receiver, just because he can kind of return a little bit. I don't know that he's that good enough a returner that has got much of a chance of happening.
That's a really good point, Ron. I'm glad you brought that up. That's a really good point. That's something to look at.
Yeah, so we'll see about that. I don't think he provides any kind of anything, you know, value at wide receiver to merit.
Certainly
if he was a stud returner, like a specialty guy, like a Megatt kind of guy, who cares what he provides at wide receiver, or if it's a running back but I don't think he's good enough.
You keep guys like Devin Hester on the roster because they're good at returning, not because they're good at wide receiver.
Exactly. None of these returners like that. Not Landry, not LaMichael James, not Christian Jones.
I don't call him LaMichael.
He wants to be called a Mike, so I'm not kidding.
He has to earn his nickname first.
Oh, is it a nickname? I thought maybe we were just mispronouncing his name.
His name is LaMichael. His given name is LaMichael. If you want to call him LaMike, if your name is Michael and you want to be called Mike, fine. But it just sounds. You had the la. His mom decided to add the la to it, so now trying to change it makes it sound like he's giving himself a nickname. So
I'm just gonna call him Rick James. No, I'm just kidding. I'm Rick James. No, okay, I can't say the rest of it. It's a clean show.
If LaMichael continues to play the way he's playing, like the Panthers version of him, not the Bears version of him. If he continues to do that, then I think they will keep four because, like you said, Jay Ajayi is a draft pick and he still has upside, but he needs a redshirt freshman year to give himself some time to develop.
Understood, understood. Okay, couple more. Joe Dodono. Oh, God, sorry, Joe. I never knew how to pronounce your last name. It's been reported that we are out of the Evan Mathis sweepstakes. After watching the first two preseason games, should we jump back in?
Who reported that?
Omar. Actually, he said it was Omar. I was going to try not to bring up Omar. Omar tweeted that we were out of the Evan Mathis sweepstakes.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just say this much. When Matt was reporting that the Dolphins were this close to signing Sue and it was only a matter of time, and he was saying that it's only the first quarter and nothing's really even happened yet, guess who turned out to be right? Just saying.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm not going to – if Omar's the one tweeting that we're out of the Evan Mathis sweepstakes, it's probably because he's all ticked off that Dallas Thomas did good enough that the team – this is actually a really good example. Omar is a perfect example of the Dolphin fans who want Thomas and Turner and Douglas to fail so that they can go sign Evan Mathis because there's no questions with Evan Mathis. He's going to do what he does. So that is actually a very good example of somebody who's upset – that Thomas is doing good enough to warrant them not going out to go get Mathis. So whether we're out of the sweepstakes or not, I'm personally going to go with we are still in that to a certain degree because it seems that every team in the NFL is still there and they're just not willing to pay him the $5 million price tag he's demanding. So if he brings his price down, I wouldn't be surprised if the Dolphins went after him one more time because who wouldn't want to add a top 100 player? His issue is his ego not willing to realize that he's 34 years old and nobody's going to give him a long-term expensive deal. Like, he needs to realize, hey, guess what, dude? You're not a young kid anymore. You're going to have to take what you can get. You were going to get your big money in Philadelphia, but you got greedy and wanted more.
So he wasn't even worth that, though, probably. Not at his age.
No, hey, he was still one of the best guards, and he still is one of the best guards. So he should have – $5 million – you could make the argument that he needed more money, but he shouldn't have gotten greedy because what he was making for what he does is pretty good.
He's a guard.
And he's old.
Yeah.
He's old. Forget he's a guard. He's old. And that in itself is the problem.
Yes. You're right. You're right. Definitely, dude. Okay.
Like, it's more about I personally think that the Dolphins are still in the Evan Mathis sweepstakes. And if he brings his price tag down, you'll see more interest coming from Miami. But If the only report coming out that the Dolphins are out of it is because Omar is doing sour grapes because he wanted Mathis so bad and now Thomas is doing good enough to warrant without it, then no, don't buy into that.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting for the Mathis situation in general. I mean, we're halfway through the preseason, and wasn't there some kind of trip that he was supposed to be taking to Seattle? Did he ever even go to Seattle?
He went to Seattle. He had a quote-unquote good visit, and they will be keeping in touch, of course.
Because they don't want to pay $11 million for a guard either.
He's keeping in touch with every team because they still won't listen to his price tag.
And I'm telling you, man, there's teams out there that – I mean, I'm sure there's other teams. I don't keep up with the Jaguars and the Raiders. Like, I mentioned the Jaguars and the Raiders because I know they have money, the Panthers. I don't know how the Panthers – cap situation is, but I know the Jaguars and Raiders have money to burn. Bucks have money to burn. You know what I mean? Like, and the Bucks have offensive line issues. They have money to burn. Denver has issues at guard, and it's known that they have issues at guard. I know that Colts have issues with the interior of their line, and these a couple of teams, last ones I mentioned, Denver and the Colts, that talk about making a difference in the playoffs, and they're still not signing them. So it's pretty obvious that he's too expensive for what he wants. Look at the other teams that aren't signing him. So don't bag on Tannenbaum and Hickey because they're not going to go overspend for this guy. He's not worth that much money. Does he help our team?
Nobody
yes.
wants to. He's if he look 1 year rental $3 million. Go for it. I don't have a problem with it. And the next year when he turns 35, we can look at it again and see what happens. But if he's looking for a 3 year deal with however much money guaranteed. Sorry, you should have stayed in Philadelphia. Nobody's going to pay you that. And if they do pay you that, it's because they finally ran out of options and there really is no other choice but to go and get you.
Yeah, and the question is, I wondered, was he really did he really force his way out of Philly? Or did it just kind of, for press reasons, make it seem that way when Chip Kelly maybe was going to cut him anyway for what he was making?
there were reports that he held out of his practices and he wanted a new deal, and that was the reason he held out and all that stuff. But Mathis, of course, is not going to freely admit that. So whether you want to believe it or not, Mathis did have a lot to do with the fact that he got moved out, because this is what Chip Kelly does. If you question his, if you question him, you're gone. It's kind of like first year Philbin with Reggie Bush and Jake Long and Carlos Dansby and those guys. You question the regime, you're out of here.
Yeah.
So Chip Kelly is like the ultimate version of that guy. That's why DeSean Jackson is gone. That's why LeSean McCoy is gone. That's why all these players are leaving. It's
enough Chip Kelly. We're talking about the Dolphins. All right.
It's relevant to an extent because
of Philbin. Yeah, because of Philbin.
You question the regime, you're out. Yeah. That's the same kind of deal again.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Okay, I got one more question here, and then we're going to wrap this up. From Doug Daniels, what would Miami's long-term plan be if suddenly Albert was just out? He's gone. Then what? It's different than, and I get the question, it's different than holding, you know, like just kind of hanging around a little bit and putting in a little filler there because you know he's coming back. But if he were to actually be gone for the year again, what are they going to do? Are they switching Juwan James over? Are they putting Dallas Thomas there? Are they going to leave Fox there? Are they going to go get somebody? What do you think they're going to do?
They're going to roll with Fox. Oh, they don't really have much of another. They don't have a choice, man. If Fox is the guy in Detroit, he was being groomed to be the next left tackle, but injuries kept him away from there. So I guess he never got a chance to really learn how to do left tackle that good other than his college years, because that's where he played in college. But once he got to the NFL, he wound up going to right tackle, and that was where he got good enough to be a decent player. Left tackle, again, making the switch is not as easy as it looks. Pouncey played guard for a while in college, and then once he got to the NFL, he moved over to center and became really good. Then trying to switch back to guard was not as easy as a transition as people were thinking. It's not that easy. So Fox's struggles probably has something to do with the fact that now he's at left tackle instead of at right tackle. But there really is no other option. Juwan James hasn't had a single snap outside of right tackle. So that would mean we'd have to undo everything that we've worked on so far and make him switch back again to go to right to go to left tackle. And then guess who would wind up going back to right tackle? That would be Fox. So it's kind of counterintuitive, because now you are putting a really good player at right tackle and putting a bad person at left tackle, and you're going to turn that really good player into a bad player at left tackle and an average player at right tackle. So no matter what you're doing, it's going to be a mess.
Yeah, it's going to be, bottom line, it's going to be like last year. It's going to be a mess. We don't really have a good plan. That's the truth. We have a plan, it's just not a good one.
The overall success of the offensive line really does depend on how quickly Albert gets back. They'll be able to survive with Fox for a little while, but if they have to go through the whole season, then it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, that's going to be an issue.
We need to get ready to draft our next man up.
All right, man, I got two things here. All right, first thing, season kickoff show I will be recording on September 7th. I will probably have it likely out late September 7th or September 8th. I've got a funny skit from our guys over at the Taint Funny podcast. They're helping me produce a little interesting skit that hopefully will make you guys laugh. Gonna have a few different guests on, and you are welcome to come on for a little bit, Lewis, if you'd like. It's September 7th. We'll talk about the details more later on if you'd like.
Sure.
Gonna be 2 hours plus. I'm gonna have some Finn's Fantasy updates. Week one preview will be included in that, and me and Sean will be doing our 53. We did the 53-man before camp, so then at that point we'll know what the 53-man are, and we're going to compare who got the closest. So we'll be doing all that more. It's going to be awesome. Looking forward to it. I'm actually moving all the equipment over to Sean's casa, his nice, awesome mansion over there, and it's just going to be a little bit different environment, kind of fun. And then also, this is the first time I mentioned it on the show, week one I will be doing a broadcast. Me and Keith will be doing a broadcast of the Miami at Washington game through Rabble.tv. It's going to be an audio broadcast, so you'll be able to mute down all the guys that hate the Fins and talk about them and listen to us. Especially if you're in a sports bar or something, you know, you put the headphones on, you can actually hear it, because when you're in a sports bar, you usually can't hear what they're saying on TV anyway. So there's a lot of opportunities, you know, go back and forth, listen to them a little, listen to us a little. You'll be able to get in there and chat with us while we're doing it. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be something new and different that I've never done before. We're going to be giving you the play-by-play and commentary secondary. So for anybody who actually can't even get the game and your only shot is to just listen to it, I hope you'll give us a shot and listen to us, man. All right, Lewis, what you got going on?
Well, since you're asking, I'm going to put this out there right now. There are still a couple of slots left in the FinManiacs.com Fantasy Football League. And if anybody is interested in joining, all you got to do is tweet me at FL Sport Debater, or you can tweet at FinManiacs to go to the website Twitter, and you can contact us there. So the entry fee is $55. The first prize is $175, second prize is $110, and third place is $55 again, so you make your money back. All the proceeds for the Yahoo Fantasy League that we're doing, it goes into the website to help us keep things going, because, hey, let me tell you guys, it's expensive to run that website, and I need help. It's all coming out of my pocket. Yeah. Like, the trip to Carolina was like $600. Oh, God, that hurts. So I do my best to make sure everybody's got the latest news, but if anybody wants to join in, it's a $55 entry fee. You can join in. There's still a couple of slots left to fill it up, and that's gonna help us. That's gonna help us, the website, a lot, and it's hopefully you guys will be able to get yourself a little money in the process. And we'll be doing a podcast every Monday night as the season goes on, so we'll have various guests going on. Maybe I'll be able to move over to Blog Talk Radio or something like that, so that way I can actually have callers in, and that way we can have guests like my friend Big Troy Drayton call in again, or maybe Randy McMichael can jump in again. So we're working on things where the website's under new management nowadays, so we're trying to see if we can figure out ways to make it get going again. So if anybody wants to join the league, you let me know. And if anybody wants to join the podcast, you know where to find, you know when to find us.
All right, cool, man. All right, if you guys want to talk to me, the best place to reach me is on Twitter at UnsquishTheFish. You can also email me at UnsquishTheFish as well. And I also have a Facebook page. Yeah, UnsquishTheFish. It's pretty consistent with what everything's called. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Lewis, for joining me. And Landry, 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 Landry. Fins up.